Hi, I'm Sarah.
And I'm Anna. And we're business partners, mums, and we're also mates.
Yes, we are. But we are also chefs, taxi drivers, band-aid appliers. The list goes on. So we know that the juggle is real.
We're here to chat with you about how to find joy in the juggle, as well as bringing you all kinds of connected conversations with inspiring people who have stories of their own to tell and insight to share about how to set your soul on fire.
Also, we might throw in a swear word or some cheeky context, so perhaps if little ones are around, it's best to listen with AirPods in.
So you're... we... how do you wrap up an intro?
There's an economic theory called Parkinson's Law, and you may not have heard of that term, but you'll know exactly what it is. Parkinson's Law is the theory that says a task will expand to fill the time made available for it.
Oh, so true.
If you've got a month to do it, it'll take you a month.
That really hits.
Yeah,
really
if you've got 2 days to do it, it'll take you 2 days. If you don't give yourself a deadline, you're not going to do it.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Workwives. This is a really bloody special episode, actually. Why is that, Sarah?
It's an episode with a difference. It's not just you and I banging on.
What?
What? We have our very first guest.
Oh my God.
She's a cracker. In fact, you might want to pour yourself a cup of tea or a nice big dirty cocktail because this woman is very, very accomplished, but she's also an absolute hoot. She is so much fun and she has so many gold nuggets for us all.
All right, without further ado, let's crack into it. Here is our interview with best-selling author Kate Christie.
Anna, I want to introduce you to our very new bestest friend in the whole wide world. Kate is a very accomplished woman who is incredibly inspiring, and I quite possibly think she may even change the way that we live our lives. She is tenacious, courageous, articulate, and she's fearless. She's 50-ish in age. She's thriving professionally, is brimming with wisdom, positivity, and growth. I'm really talking her up, aren't I?
She deserves it. I thought you were talking about me for a minute, but keep going.
She's a multiple best-selling author, a coach, a speaker, a lawyer, and a media commentator. And incredibly interesting, she is a time management specialist expert. Ooh. She's unstoppable and she's actually hashtag life goals.
Wow. That is, I have to say, that's a very impressive list of accomplishments. Welcome, Kate.
Thank you so much for having me. I mean, I sound so awesome when you read it like that.
Do you feel like everyone, whenever you walk into a room, someone should be there to introduce you to the room
that way? Oh, no, and here she is.
No, seriously, you are. You're positive and you're happy and you're really inspiring, and that's why we wanted you on the show today. I recently came across this beautiful book. It's your latest book and it's called The Life List, Master Every Moment and Live an Audacious Life. I devoured it and it resonated with so many of the conversations that Anna and I have on the daily. So can you just tell us what led you to writing this book?
Yeah, look, it's, as you say, it's my fifth book, and it's interesting because it's probably my most personal book. In the past, I think I was played it a little bit safer with my writing and hid behind my expertise and shared my expertise but didn't really share me. And so this book was much more personal, and it came about as the result of, you know, family tragedy, really. My ex-husband, who I'd been separated from for about 4 years. We came into COVID in March 2020, and everyone was kind of, the whole world was wrapping their heads around that concept. And in April 2020, he was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. And he was, you know, my husband for 22 years. You know, you love that person. There's so much history. And whilst we were separated, we had kind of got to the point where we had a new way of being, and we were co-parenting very well. We were, you'd be pretty good friends. We would share, you know, family birthdays, and he and I would phone each other often not about ourselves, but about the kids, you know. So we had a good working relationship. And his diagnosis was incredibly shocking, and it came at a time of real turmoil for my kids anyway, because they were in high school, they were going through COVID, they were not able to go to school, the same as everybody else. But on top of that, their dad was all of a sudden incredibly sick with this very uncertain diagnosis. And he seemed to be really good for months. And so he was having treatment, and I remember, you know, we all had Christmas together, and between Christmas and the months after that, his decline was so phenomenally fast. And he passed away in April, sort of 11 months shy of having been diagnosed. And it was so quick and so brutal and so shocking. And we were just left breathless. And I then had that process of having to nurse my children through watching their dad die and the deterioration in his health. And you know, they were grieving his death even before he was gone. And it was, I can only describe it as brutal. You know, it was the worst experience I've ever been through. My loss is as nothing to their loss. They've lost their dad, and they're not even aware yet of everything they've lost. And It was just a very profound kind of realization for me that life is too short. I had turned 50 the month that he was diagnosed. I think that as women in our 50s, anyway, we're going through a stage of transformation, and, you know, we're shedding old skin, and we're all of a sudden have greater time and space, and our kids are growing up, and there's this reinvention of ourselves anyway. And so it was just this kind of imperfect, horrific storm that caused me to pause and think, I just don't want to live life the way I've been living it anymore. You know, life's too short. I don't want to put stuff off. I want to redesign my life, and I want to make it incredible, and I want to do things differently. But I didn't then think, oh, I'm going to write a book. I sort of, you know, went through this process of really looking after my kids and being there for everything. And in the September, I sat down, and I'm an opinion columnist for CEO World magazine, which is a US-based magazine, digital magazine, and I write for them about productivity and time management. And I woke up one day and I thought, fuck it. I'm not allowed to swear, but I do.
No, please go for it.
I just thought, I'm going to write a list of things I'm going to do differently because of Dan's death. You know, this is what I'm going to do. So I wrote this really short paragraph sort of explaining what had happened, and then said, so, you know, here's what I'm going to do, and I'm going to do it differently. Here's my list, and it's my life list. And it was this long list, and it was things like, you know, I'm not going to vacuum as often, and I'm not going to, you know, I'm going to love my kids every single day, even when they're shitting me, and I'm going to be there when they need me, and I'm going to climb mountains, and I'm going to, you know, downsize my house. I'm going to chuck a whole heap of crap out, and I'm going to, you know, swim in the ocean, and I'm going to swear, and I'm going to eat lollies. And it was just this list of how I want to live my life. And it took me about 20 minutes to write. I emailed it off to them, and I thought, they won't even publish this because it's so far from what I normally write about, you know, this practical Kate will solve your life's time management issues. And within about half an hour, it was on their front cover. And it went viral. It was incredible. And I got emails from all around the world with people saying, I cannot tell you how much this has touched us. You know, I want to write my own life list. Can I have your life list? And there was just this trigger. I thought, you know, this is impactful. This will help other people live very differently. And so I wrote the book.
Did it? Sorry, I have so much to ask you about that.
I know, but that was like a real monologue, wasn't it?
No. It's great. So I guess I'll start by saying I totally hear what you're saying, because so I listened to the audiobook version because I'm an audiobook girl. I like to listen while I drive, and it was, on a side note, it was really nice to hear you read it in a way that wasn't very monologue. You're a very good reader. Like, I heard it very well from you reading it.
Thank you.
And then Sarah also, obviously had the hard copy. And I think both of them are great for different reasons. But with the content, I think both of us resonated the most with the parts of the book where you were the most personal. And you said you explained things in a way that neither of us had heard before. So, for instance, Sarah is in a time in her life where a lot of the people around her are starting to go through divorces. Mm. And the way that you explained that was a way that she hadn't heard it before. And the way that you explained grieving in an unconventional way, in an unconventional relationship, in that you were grieving the death of your ex-husband, but he's still your husband, he's still your life partner, is still that person. I resonated with that because I, you know, from losing a stepfather and having that fatherly relationship, but it's not a traditional relationship that you're meant to have. So it's really funny because the things that we loved the most about it were the parts where you were really speaking from your soul and we could feel that. But we also feel how scary it can be to put yourself out there in such a personal way. So even though you had kind of shed that skin that you said in your 50s, did it still feel scary for you to put yourself out there in that way?
Oh, terrifying. Absolutely.
Really?
Absolutely. Terrifying. But also life-changing. It's been such a lesson for me. There's been so much growth for me having gone through that process of it's okay to let your guard down. It's okay to share that things are really tough. It's okay to do it through a lens of not being preachy and telling other people what the answers are, but just saying, hey, this is what it was like for me. But it's I think, a couple of lessons. Firstly, I think it softened me a little bit. I've had my closest friends sort of say to me, you know, there's something a bit different about you. They're kind and they're my best friends, so they won't say you're less uptight, but they do say things
that's
like,
what they're saying.
Yeah, you seem softer. So there's that part of it. But there's also, I think it's a real gift to other people to share with authenticity. I think in letting my guard down, the biggest lesson for me is that it's important because it helps other people and it starts a conversation. And I've had so many women, so much more than all the other books combined, write to me to say, hey, this was so important for me to hear this lesson, or I needed to hear this right now. Well, thank you for sharing. Mm. Now I can share, and this is what's happened to me. And so all these women kind of give me these backstories, and I feel so honored that they will share with me how they feel. It's a real gift. But
yeah. I feel like part two is already writing itself, Kate.
Yeah, exactly.
Tangible experiences from other women.
I know, right?
How to lay yourself bare, be scared and do it anyway.
But it has been quite terrifying because I'm private. I'm very closed off to that in the past, and so sharing those bits of me have been hard. I think the other bit that was hard and terrifying was I just had to be so conscious the whole way of the impact it was going to have on the kids. You know, they're young adults, and I was writing about the breakdown of my relationship with their dad. I was then writing about the death of their dad, and so I had to, and I was very conscious of doing that in a way that was kind, that it wasn't just, you know, one-sided, but also that I had their permission. So, you know, I made sure that they each read the parts of the book that I felt they needed to read, to make sure they were comfortable with it, and they wanted some edits, and I made the edits. And but that also in itself then opened up this beautiful discussion with them where we sort of sat down and all, you know, cried together again.
And kind of processed in a different way maybe than you had been
able
to.
Yeah, and I guess in me exposing a little bit of my loss and hurt and pain, and crying to them, it allowed them to again kind of cry, because I think part of them was trying to be really stoic, and so for me to let my guard down, it allowed them to let their guard down and have different conversations about their dad. So look, the whole process was absolutely terrifying.
Yeah, I can imagine, but it's come out brilliantly and it worked. So super quickly, the difference really between a life list and a bucket list, like that we create all sorts of lists in our lives, but can you just really quickly touch on what the difference is between say a bucket list or your usual everyday.
And just so you know, Kate, you're speaking Anna's language. She has a list for everything. She has a list for, you know, when to drink water. She's got beeps going off on her phone. So she's all about lists.
Excellent. I love a list too. So look, the life list and a bucket list are different in sort of two really clear ways. The first is that, you know, a bucket list is a list that people put together of things they want to do before they die. And if you're 50, let's hope you live till you're 90. That's a 40 years you've kind of got to wait to realise the list. I don't want to put off to do the things that will be most impactful for me until before I die. Mm-hmm. So a life list is, you know, but with a bucket list, the question you ask is, well, what do I want to do before I die? With a life list, right. The question you ask is, well, what do I want to do while I'm still young enough to enjoy it? The second thing is that a bucket list is often revolves around travel and adventure. And these are the destinations I want to go to. These are the adventures and the experiences I want to have. And as an aside, often those experiences are crazy shit that's going to hasten your death anyway. You know, like I want to jump out of a plane, or I want to bungee jump, or I want to swim with sharks. And, right? You know, what the hell? A life list is, I have it covering sort of seven chapters of your life. So definitely travel experiences and adventure is in there, but also, you know, wealth. You know, what do I want to do? Have I got my superannuation sorted? Have I got my wills sorted? Do I have a medical power of attorney? You know, have I got my investments sorted? I think often as women at our age or at my age, you know, you play roles in a marriage or in a relationship, or you may be a single woman. Are you truly across your finances? Do you understand it? Are you financially literate? There's health, there's giving. You know, you get to an age and it's like, well, I have an incredible wealth of knowledge and IP and how am I going to share that? You know, what are the causes and the charities I want to contribute to?
I love that in the book you spoke about how that's really important to you. Why have all this knowledge and not pass it on? Why not share what I know? And I just absolutely love that.
Yeah.
I also love in the introduction, Kate, you wrote, I want more moments that are spectacular.
Yeah.
And I just think that's awesome. We have a life, but we can make it an extraordinary life.
Exactly. It's really about your life list in a nutshell is about making sure that you're living a life with purpose from today onwards. You know, don't put it off till later. Later might be too late. And that's why I share the story of Dan's death. You know, he was 54 and he, you know, had put off so much of what he wanted to do with the kids because he was going to do it later, and later became too late.
That's so powerful that you had just turned 50, because they're saying that, you know, our kids might live to 120, you know, even if we live to 100, which would be wonderful, you've only reached halfway. So you just can't pack up and say, I'm done. You've just got to look and create what's going to happen for the next half.
That's right. And it's got to be across everything, you know, not just travel and adventure. It's how do you want to live your life today? And it doesn't have to be the huge, big, hairy, audacious goals. I mean, absolutely they're in there, but it's just the day-to-day things, like the little things, like I'm not going to, you know, sweat, you know, who's taking the bins out. I mean, seriously, who cares? You know, as long as they get out, you know, I'm not going to sweat, you know, having takeaway again because I'm just too bloody tired to cook. But I will sweat some of the other stuff, like, you know, stop ordering Macca's takeaway. There's a room, you know, there's a fridge full of food, you know, who's going to cook? So it's just about
being more fucking socks in the laundry.
You know, how hard can it be?
Hey, let's get into the nitty gritty, Kate. I am one of those people who flipped right to the back of the book, and
she's that type of person.
Okay. Who I am. Because you did give a really elaborate list of your own to give examples. I think it's actually the A to Z of your own list. And it's not just this is what I want to do. You've actually said who do I need to help me do it? This is what I need to do. Why do I want to do it? It's really beautifully spelled out. And I think the great thing about those tangible points that you've put throughout is it helps other people reading the book. If they're like, I've got an idea, when they read yours that can spark, oh, hang on, yeah, I've always wanted to travel to Italy or whatever. I think reading all of that information that you've stepped down and poured out that really helped spark it for other people. So there's a lot there. We want to ask, is there anything that you've already ticked off, or can you share with our listener just some of the great things, some of like maybe your top five things that are on your life list?
Oh, okay. So yes, I have been really actively ticking them off. I think there's two parts to the life list concept. The first is the design piece. You've got to design and write your life list. And the second is the doing bit. You know, unless you implement your goals and unless you tick them off, it's just a list, right? And anyone can write a list, but you have to actually do it. So I'm actively chasing down the goals all of the time. So I've just come back from 7 weeks in Bali, where I was living and working there.
Yes, queen. Yeah, you did.
That was a go big goal for me. But in amongst that, I went after some go now goals. So one of my sons and his girlfriend came to visit, and they said, "Hey, we're going to Lombok next weekend. We're climbing a volcano. Do you want to come with us?" I'm like, "Hell yeah!" And we climbed Mount Rinjani. It almost fucking killed me. Honestly, it was the single hardest thing ever. But that was amazing.
But you did it.
I did it. And I did it with them, and there was so much joy in that. I have developed, you know, a recent one this year, I've developed my giving policy for my business. So I've always sort of actively, you know, given time and contributed my knowledge to certain causes, but I'm just much more deliberate about it now. I've written a policy. I know exactly who and which charities I support and in what capacity. We've formalized our relationship, you know, in a form of a partnership. So it's more about just being really deliberate. I set the big goal, like a really big goal of finding love. So I, you know, I'd been separated for 6 years. I had dabbled a little bit in dating last year. It was just horrific. honestly, horrific.
For a better outcome than that.
Well, then my darling girlfriend said, "No, get back on that horse, lady." And it's really interesting because under L in the A to Z part of the book, I talk about love and I talk about finding love again. And I go through this, it's hilarious when I read it now, because I go through this process of basically saying all the reasons why I shouldn't actually need to find love, and I'm really happy on my own and I'm pretty good and I'm pretty great, and, you know, this person's going to have to add a lot of value because, Jesus, I'm bloody great. and then so I write this sort of manifestation of if I'm going to find you, then this is who you are. And I write it out. And anyway, I met him cue double gasp. Well done, you two.
I hope this isn't the horrific part, by the way.
This is the amazing bit. So I've been in a relationship for 8 months. I'm very in love. I look back at that list that I wrote in the book, and it made me realize that there's this beautiful intersection between kind of manifesting and visualizing the future and then very intentionally setting it out to kind of track it down as a goal. You know, you can't just manifest and say, "Oh, I want to find love and here's who it is." You have to then very intentionally go through a process of dating and you know, being true to yourself and being really clear about what you want and what you don't want. And so there's this beautiful intersection between kind of manifestation and implementation. And I think that's what the life list does. It allows you to manifest your perfect life, but then you have to do the hard work to implement, and it happens. It works.
Do you know what's so funny? My very next question was, how do we manifest the perfect life list? Do we write it down?
Before you do, Anna, I'm just going to interject here because this is a bit saucy and Kate might blush.
Alrighty.
This is what she wrote to her dream lover. "To my new love, to my partner and my soulmate, here is who you are. You are honest and trustworthy. You are wise, protective and compassionate. You make me laugh. You are driven." A whole heap of other really beautiful stuff. "When you look at me and touch me, I feel so desired that I am breathless."
Oh. Hello.
You are generally interested in my happiness. It's a really big list. It just goes on, and we support each other in each other's dreams. I so look forward to meeting you.
Oh, mate. Even just reading that makes me envious of whatever you've got going on right now.
I know. Look at the smile on my face. It's ridiculous.
She's breathless, Anna.
I am. And he'll often say to me, because I think in that list, I think also I say something about having knee-shaking sex, and he'll often say to me, oh, did your knees shake?
He's the guy in the book.
I'm really happy
for you. I think that's wonderful. Yeah. I'm just really, really thrilled for you. And just looking at the smile that came across your face, you do deserve happiness. We all deserve happiness, and that's so great.
And look, it's also, you know, it's also just a lovely message for women listening that you can find love again, regardless of what stage you are in your life or what age. And, you know, we all have a backstory, right? You know, we a lot of my clients that I work with are either separated or divorced or single women. And I think that it just sort of gives you hope that you can have love again. And it is lovely, and we all deserve it. And just be intentional about it, and don't compromise too much, because the right people are out there for you. I think that's the other thing, is that, you know, I sort of kind of now sort of firmly believe that there's not one sort of soulmate for you in this world. You know, I think that there's lots of people who can kind of fit the bill. You've just got to know exactly what and who you want. And that's that, I guess, Anna, that's that intentional kind of visualization. And in terms of writing a life list, you know, I'm definitely a pen and paper girl. I write this stuff down, and very intentional about how I plan it out, which is kind of goes to that A to Z bit at the back, which is very in depth. You know, I follow a template on this, and some people have said, well, doesn't that kind of remove some of the joy from the process? And I find joy in that process.
Yeah, it would spark it for me. That would be manifestation part of it.
Yeah, but then you have to then very deliberately implement. You know, manifestation is not enough. You can't just sit there and say, hey, I want $1 million in my bank account, and then just sit back and drum your fingers and wait for it to hit. You know, you have to then implement.
You have to buy the lottery ticket.
No, you do not. You have to very intentionally do all the hard work to make it happen. So there's joy in the process, but there's also joy in the outcome. You know, there's joy in the journey as well as the destination.
Okay, we are taking a break in the podcast to personally invite you to join us for 4 days in beautiful Bali.
Sarah, this is not your average hippy-dippy women's retreat.
No, it's not, Anna.
Well, it's a little bit hippy-dippy.
That's right. We're heading into the jungles in Ubud into a barefoot luxury retreat. And we want you there.
It's a journey for you to reflect personally and privately, let go of what's no longer serving you, and embrace what sets your soul on fire. Because really, when do we ever give ourselves the time and space to actually do that?
Never. We've set the tone in the environment that is just so nurturing. Yes, we're above the rice fields, but there's also a real rock vibe. We're going to bring in some DJs, nightly music, even going to bring in a local village for a cultural night. You want to do some morning yoga and breath work? Absolutely. You want to sleep in? Knock yourself out.
There's workshops where we dive deep into all aspects of our lives to reignite our joy, whether that be for our profession, our relationship, or ourselves.
There's organic food and drinks, and let me tell you, the food is absolutely amazing. If you want vodka in your green juice at 10 o'clock, that's totally acceptable as well.
Every day we get a daily buffet brunch and dinner provided, serving nourishing and indulging recipes that are made from fresh, organic and locally sourced produce that's going to satisfy all dietary preferences.
We're also giving you lots of space in the schedule just to really do what you want to do. If you want to go and explore Bali, jump into a waterfall, or just hang out and slide down the slide into the pool, then it's completely up to you.
We're also going to explore the heart of Bali by immersing in any number of adventures, from outings to landmarks or sacred sites, to trying your hand at a traditional Balinese cooking class if that's what you're up to.
Anna,
You've missed the most best part of everything.
What's that, Sarah?
You've missed the amazing day spa where the girls bless you on arrival and you literally just sink into that day bed and all of your worries drift away.
Oh, take me back there now. When can we go back?
Funny you should ask, Anna. We've actually got a couple of women's only retreats available. Hurry.
June 29th to July 2nd, 2024, and another from July 3rd to 6th, 2024.
So grab your other exhausted women in your life, whether it's another business owner, another mum friend, your mum, whoever. You can even come alone, but come with us and escape just for a minute and find your inner joy. Trust us, it is going to be amazing.
You can find feedback from previous attendees, as well as all of the other information that you need on our website at www.theworkwives.com.au or through the link in our bio on our Instagram page at the.work.wives.
We'll see you by the fire pit with a cocktail in a coconut shell.
Absolutely. We look forward to seeing you there.
See you there.
Now, before we interviewed you, Kate, we both privately went away and wrote, we just got started on our own life list and we haven't shared with each other what we have got. Yeah. So we're going to share with each other in front of you what's on our life list.
Oh my goodness. This
Not all of them,
but just going to get the juices flowing. And the funny thing is about writing it, it's things that I knew were there, but I hadn't really thought about or actioned. It was really funny writing it down because it's stuff that I probably wouldn't do if I hadn't have written it down. So my first one was to write a children's book.
Oh. That's literally nothing I've ever heard you say before, ever.
Really? Yeah. You actually want to write a children's book?
I'd love to.
Really?
Yes.
What about?
But just whenever I hear those funny little clever books and my mind starts thinking and I start, like, I'm always in the car to the kids rhyming and doing stuff and I'm thinking, well, that's no better than what I do in the car and I don't have to my own audience.
I love that. That is a beautiful goal.
What's your first one?
Mine would be, you know what, my whole life I've wanted to do the splits and I've never been able to do it.
See,
so
that
before
again,
I die. Right?
So that was like, I think I've, a couple of mine I wanted to learn to surf. I wanted to stretch properly. Like, I don't stretch properly. So splits,
no.
100%. Yeah. I want to learn how to ride a skateboard.
Yeah, I right.
Love that.
Do you know, I came up with the splits thing after reading about your ski stuff. Like, when you, because you're skiing, and I get a lot of what you were saying in the book, you know, it takes a skiing. The trick about skiing well is it's a mental game. It's not a physical game, right? It's a mental game of getting through the fear of it.
Yeah.
And I, for me, that was the split.
So Anna's vagina will thank you later when it's able to touch the ground.
always happy to have a great vagina. So that's great.
My next one is to do a triathlon with my girls. Not a huge one, but I'm really trying to get active with them. Yeah. And they asked me to do it recently and I kind of said yes, yes, yes. And then I'm actually going to write this weekend, go and actually enroll us and do a triathlon.
Do it. Oh, yeah. You have been talking about that one for a while. So
yeah.
That's
yeah. Fantastic. And so that kind of ticks off a couple of elements, right? It's your, if you think about those seven chapters, it's health and well-being, but it's also, you know, firmly sits in the relationship chapter in terms of, you know, wanting to do something with your girls. And, you know, I love those goals that have a number of chapters involved. It's not just, oh, well, this is just about an experience or this is just an adventure or this is just about creating wealth. It cuts across multiple chapters and it will be more fulfilling for that.
Just on a side note with that, you do talk about going skiing with your daughter as prompted by her and that it wasn't something that you had thought about doing before then. After having done that experience with her, the most fulfilling part of that, was it that you had accomplished that goal yourself or was it the experience that you had with her?
Oh, the experience with her, for sure.
Yeah, right.
And seeing her joy in being so much better than me at something was really beautiful. You know, as a young woman at the time, she was in year 10, and I think, you know, we often live in our mother's shadow, and for her to actually have that realization on top of a mountain that she was genuinely much better at something than me and she loved it, and not in a kind of a condescending, patronising up your bum way.
Yeah, that's
but
an
more
accomplishment
in terms
for a
of
kid.
Real joy that, oh my god, like I can do this better than mum, and then me asking her for tips and her then being able to give me advice. You know, that was where the joy was.
That's spoken like a true mama bear. We'll share the rest of our list on our Instagram. But, Kate, just what you're talking about with your daughter, we often leave our dreams on the table for our kids and our partners, and I think anyone listening will resonate with that. Mm. You were a power player. You were a lawyer. And now you're a very busy time management expert. We are often just so time poor. So how do we find the time to, A, create our own life list, let alone live it?
Yeah.
What may, you know, how do we do that?
Yeah, okay. So really great question. And I love that because it sort of goes to explaining, you know, that having the life list and goals is really just that next piece in the evolution of getting your time under control. You know, my job is to help you find the time to then live the life that you love. And so in terms of finding that time, you know, there's lots and, you know, lots and lots of strategies, but I guess a couple of really important ones is just to give yourself deadlines. So lock a regular time into your calendar to sit down and create your life list. Don't think, oh, well, I'll get to that, because you won't. There's an economic theory called Parkinson's Law, and you may not have heard of that term, but you'll know exactly what it is. Parkinson's law is the theory that says a task will expand to fill the time made available for it.
Oh, so true.
If you've got a month to do it, it'll take you a month.
That really hits.
Yeah,
really
if you've got 2 days to do it, it'll take you 2 days. If you don't give yourself a deadline, you're not going to do it. So I guess the best piece of advice I can give you and your listeners is to say, okay, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to carve out some time for myself tomorrow at 4 p.m. and I'm going to give myself an hour and I'm just going to write my first draft of my life list.
That's really great advice.
Lock the time.
Because you're right. Otherwise, it just...
It could take you 2 days or 2 years if you don't have a deadline.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like me currently cleaning up my wardrobe.
And then as far as actually writing the life list, so one of the things I would struggle with is, and I know you talk about having a mix of really big goals and really small goals, is there such a thing like as having too many goals or not enough goals? Is there a happy medium?
Yeah, I love that question. That's a really good question. I think yes. I in all manifestations of the question, I think I've always been really good at setting goals and implementing them. But what I was doing wrong in the past was I had one big goal at a time. That was it, and so I'd have this big goal. I'm gonna climb Mount Everest, and I'd go climb Mount Everest, and then I'd, my next big goal, I'm gonna, you know, run a marathon, so I'd go run a marathon. Neither of those two things I've done, by the way. I'm just, you know,
wow, Jesus, accomplishments just keep coming.
I'm gonna fly to the moon. I was tackling them one goal at a time, and what I realized in writing the book was that you know, that was the wrong approach. It was certainly the wrong approach for me. So I think you need to have multiple goals on the go at once. And they need to be a mix of the really big, hairy, audacious goals that are going to take months for you to implement and realize. And then they need to be some of the sort of the go small goals, the two or three ways of filling your cup this month that keep you going and keep you focused whilst you're working on the big goal. So in terms of what I found, the happy medium for me is I always have at least two really go big goals on the go that I'm working towards. And I try and lock in 3 to 4 of the smaller goals per month. And then the third goal is the go now goal, whereas there's acts of spontaneity where someone says, hey,
that's my bag.
They're my hardest ones because I'm this, you know, I'm the time management expert, right? My life is organized to within an inch of itself. And I've never been that kind of girl who's like, oh, let's go do X and we'll do it. So that's been the hardest one for me to do. But I'm getting really good at that. I'm doing at least one a month. So last year, or when I wrote the book, I knew I was so bad at, or I would be bad at being spontaneous, that I locked in a month that I had to be spontaneous. So I appreciate the irony of planning to be spontaneous. So last August was my go yes month, and I had to say yes to everything that came my way, and I did some hilarious stuff. And I've continued it on because what I realized, it gave me so much joy. And yeah. I got so much momentum. You know, that month, you know, I went speed dating with my girlfriend. We went to a pub. It was horrendous. I went to a water park with my kids, and I had to go on all the scary rides. And there was all this stuff that I did. And it just gave me so much joy and momentum. So my most recent one this month, like 2 weeks ago, one of my girlfriends said, okay, let's go pole dancing. Like, let's go pole dancing.
You don't know this, but my daughter went to high school this year and she said, I'm just going to call it the year of yes. So I have been having the year of yes, and Anna could call me on any given weekend. And I'm like, she's like, where are you? And only recently I'm like, I'm just packing up for my pole dancing class. I thought if she can do it, I can do it too. And it is, it's liberating. We always talk on the, like, our podcast about moments that set your soul on fire. And I think those spontaneous moments are those ones that make you feel alive.
100%. And it's so much joy in it. And you then think, I've got to really go this hard. Like, if I'm going to do it, I'm doing it. So
to commit.
You know, we're at the pole dancing, and we're grinding the pole. You know, she goes, there's a lot of grinding, and I was so uncoordinated. And you're looking in the mirror, and I'm whacking my bum, and I think she was thinking that I thought I was like at stripper school, but it was so fun. And then I'm saying, I want to be upside down. And she goes, we don't usually cover that in the first lesson. I'm going, oh, come on. So, you know, there's all these photos of me upside down of the pole and
legs akimbo.
Totally. So you look, you know, if you're going to do it properly.
Yeah, for sure. I'm awesome. With you on that one.
You speak about moments creating momentum. That really hit me. Would you be able just to elaborate on what a moment is and how it becomes momentum and what that means to you?
Yeah. Look, it's I found this probably the most powerful part of the book for me, to be honest.
Me too.
Is the concept of moments. It's a word I've always used, and I've always used it with my kids just to buy time. You know, give me a moment, I'll be there in a moment. And when I was writing the book, I was thinking a lot about momentum and the fact that the word moment is in momentum. So I thought, well, I'll look it up and work out exactly what it properly means, because I use it, but I don't know exactly what it means. And I was just astonished that it has three different meanings. It's a honomon. And so the first meaning is that it's a unit of time. It's actually 90 seconds. So just in the way that a minute is 60 seconds, a moment is 90 seconds. So
that's one of the least known facts in the world, I reckon.
Oh, I know. The venerable. So I just loved that.
The kids, give me 90 seconds. It starts now.
I know. So when if give me a moment, I'm asking for 90 seconds. The second definition is that it's a unit of energy. So if we used to have the old Richter scale, like when there was an earthquake, and they use the magnitude, the momentum magnitude scale now, or the moment magnitude scale, and it measures the power of the earthquake at the moment that it actually erupts or quakes. And then the third definition is it's a unit of force. So in physics, anything that pivots on a hinge, like a seesaw going up and down on a hinge, or a door opening on a hinge, that swivel motion is called a moment. And I was just so struck by this. And I thought, you know, I can achieve anything in my life if I just give it 90 seconds of energy to open a new door. You know, if I combine those three definitions, 90 seconds and enough energy to open a door, I can change my life. And I guess it grew from there. And then once I had that concept in my head and I was testing it with my clients to say, hey, just take 90 seconds. It just takes 90 seconds. We can do a lot in 90 seconds. There's a lot of doors you can open. Mm. And once you've opened that door and you take the step through it, the definition of mass in motion is momentum. And we are mass. Mm. And once you start taking those steps forward, you have momentum. And so the word moment is in the word momentum. And what you do then with what that door you've opened, that goal you've set, that incredible, exciting life you want to leave, which you can manifest in 90 seconds, you then create a life which is momentous. And the word moment is in there again. And so I'm very passionate about the concept of moments and taking just 90 seconds of time to generate enough energy to open a new door in your life. It's really as simple as that.
I think we'll remember that for the rest of our lives. Yeah. That's really powerful.
That was really powerful. The other thing that I found really powerful was you talking about the beauty of where you're finding yourself in your 50s. And we both know a lot of people reaching this time of their life who are starting to actually feel invisible. But you wrote about it in such a beautiful, vibrant, glorious way that makes it sound so incredibly appealing. So I guess, do you have any advice for anybody going into this time of their life who's starting to feel invisible?
Yeah. Look, I think it's definitely a time of phenomenal transformation. You know, as I mentioned earlier, we all have a backstory, right? You don't get to this age in your 50s without having had loss or sadness or trauma or events that have, you know, basically sort of created who you are. And but that, it's simply that is all it is. It's your backstory. It doesn't mean that that's your future story, right? You know, it can inform who and what you want to be in the future, but you get to create that. You get to say what your future story is. It's a complete moment of choice. You get to design the next part of your life. And I think that our 50s is a beautiful time to do that, because we are coming, you know, often if we're mothers, then, you know, our kids are a little bit older, you know, we may be empty nesting, or they may be old enough and independent enough, they don't need us there all the time. We suddenly have a little bit of more time and space and freedom. And we also are at the peak of our professional careers, and we have a phenomenal amount of intellectual property. We are wise beyond belief. And on top of that, we are also the most active generation of women in our 50s ever. We are the healthiest, wealthiest, most successful, most energetic, most goddamn sexy women in our 50s.
God, I want to be 50 already.
It's bloody fantastic. So yeah. This concept of invisibility, I think, is one that is really foisted upon us by the media and by external influences. Oh, you're in your 50s, you're invisible. It's a crock of shit. I have never felt more energetic, more liberated. I have more time, money, freedom, choice. I get to design what it is that I want. So
shaking knees.
So this concept of, you know, being in a midlife crisis is rubbish. It's a midlife catalyst.
Do you think it's nice, because we come out of school and we kind of go to school, we either get a trade, we go to uni, we buy a car, we move out, we get a house. Do you think everything is so pre-programmed that when we get to 50, because we've mothered our children and we've done our role, it's actually not already designed? And you really resonated when you said that, you know, we get to design our life. We get to call the shots. We get to do what we want to do. Do you think that too many people are just going through the motions rather than getting there and going, hey, wake up, bitch. It's time to, like, do what you want to do?
Yeah. I think there's that element. It's interesting, because I actually surveyed my clients on this to get the answer, because I was coming at it from a perspective of a place of joy and so much opportunity. But I also realize that there's a lot of women who may be approaching it with a sense of trepidation or a nervousness about invisibility or a fear. So I wanted to get a sense of, you know, are you excited about this time or are you fearful? And it was really interesting to get those responses. And there's sort of, you know, some very distinct categories. There's the woman who is incredibly joyful and champing at the bit and just cannot wait to get the fuck out of the house and go live her own life. Then there's that woman, and she's really sure of what she wants to do. So she's set. So there's that woman. Then there's the woman who has those feelings of excitement, but she's just not quite sure, you know, what are my choices? I need some help. I need a tribe of other women around me. I need some guidance. Just hold my hand. But I'm excited. And then there's the woman who's really nervous about it, and she can see that there's an opportunity for future and she's got a lot of choices. She just doesn't know where to start, and she's actually a little bit fearful. And then there's the woman who is really just sort of thinks, well, that's it. My life's done. My life's purpose. I have no kind of sense of self anymore. You know, I've had this completely selfless existence, and in doing any of this, does that make me selfish? And she's the one that I then have to kind of guide and coach to say, it's your turn, honey. Seriously, you know, it is your turn. And this is not about being selfish. It's just about being a little bit less selfless. Mm. So there's different categories of women, but all of them have as much opportunity as I do. You just have to have a little bit of a roadmap, and that's what the book's about. It's about giving you a framework that you can follow to make it happen. Also giving you my backstory so that you know you're not alone. You know that we all have sadness in our past, but it doesn't dictate our future. Mm. But it's also then about kind of generating and creating that tribe of other women around you to say, hey, let's do this together, because who doesn't want a cheer squad?
Right? Love that. Look, I know this is from another one of your books, but we can't let this go unspoken about. We're finding that a lot of our associates are procrastinating. They're saying there's not enough time in the day. They feel like they're just on the grind. You are a very proud time management expert. Can we just chat about that for a second? You've taught thousands globally how to save 30 plus precious hours a month using that time to design the perfect life. What's the biggest mistake we're making with time management, and how the hell do we reclaim 30 hours a month to do the stuff that we want to do?
Yeah, okay. Wow, big question. How much time do we actually have? Look, I think that the biggest mistake we make with time is that we think we can actually manage it. That time is something that we can manage and we can't. You know, we've all got exactly the same amount of time. I've got the same amount of time as you two. You've got the same amount of time as Elon Musk. So it's about how you invest the time. So one thing I would say is stop thinking about your time as something that has to be managed. Start thinking about your time the way you think about your money. It's an enormously precious, very limited resource, and you have to invest it for the greatest possible return. So just the way you invest your money, and you're very time conscious about having a money budget, you're very conscious about your budget and what's our budget for this, have a time budget. Start thinking about your money, your time, the way you think about your money. You know, if I gave you $1 million and said you can invest it in a bank or in an account that's going to return 1% or in an account that's going to return 10%, and they're your only choices, you're going to choose the account with 10%. You have to do the same with your time. Where are you going to invest it for the greatest possible return? So I think it's a mind management shift when it comes to how you think about your time. There's a gazillion strategies that I could give you to then get you to that point.
But that might be our second chat with you.
Maybe another day. But speaking of time, not management, but time investment. Mm-hmm. One of our biggest themes in our podcast when we're chatting with our listeners is that we say the juggle is real. Mm. And people, particularly women who are listening to this, can feel like they are juggling a lot.
Yeah.
You, your kids are independent young adults now, and you've taken on other things to juggle. But when they were at home, you spent some time as a very busy single woman juggling a lot. Mm. I guess, do you have any advice to women who are listening to us who have kids who are still at home and who are in that grind?
In the trenches.
In the trenches, yeah. About tricks on how to keep that juggle, how to keep all the balls in the air.
Yeah.
Because everyone looks on Instagram like it's amazing and perfect, but we like to break it down and show people that, you know, maybe you have a cook or a cleaner, or, you know, there's little strategies that get through to the end of the day.
Yeah, definitely. So I think when it comes to where you invest your time, there's four different tasks that we have to work on, or that we have in our lives. The four are things you must do, things you want to do, things that you can potentially delegate, and things you can potentially reject. And it's the delegation and the reject buckets where you're going to find those 30 hours of lost time. Mm. In terms of delegation, there's three types of delegation those busy working women need to consider. The first is kind of traditional delegation at work, where you may have a team and you say, you know, John, I need you to write this report for me, you know, delegation 101. The second type of delegation is outsourcing. My rules for outsourcing, and as you mentioned, Sarah, so, you know, let's outsource, but you have to have some rules around it. Firstly, you have to identify all the tasks that you're prepared to pay someone else to do. Now, in doing that, there's some rules. Firstly, they have to be an expert. The reason why they have to be an expert is because in their outcomes, you want them to be able to do the task faster, better, and cheaper than you. Now, if they can't do the task faster, better, and cheaper, then don't outsource it or find someone better, find a better expert to do it. So on the home front, cleaning, right? You want it, the cleaner to be able to do it faster, better, and cheaper than you. Now, in understanding if it's going to be cheaper, you need to know what your hourly rate is. And there's, again, that's a whole separate discussion. The third type of delegation is insourcing. This is where you identify everything that you do around the house that you're prepared, that you want your children to do or the people that you live with need to do for themselves that you don't have to pay them for.
Oh, God, I love this lady.
Clean up your wardrobe. Hang up your wet towel. Put the dirty stuff in the washing machine. Here's how the washing machine works. Now hang it out in the line.
Have you been to my house this morning? I feel like you've been watching. My kids literally, a wardrobe is exactly what is happening on my 9-year-old's daughter this morning.
Yes, exactly.
I love that.
And so then you work out all those tasks and you divide them up and you have a whiteboard in your kitchen and it is a spreadsheet literally that sits on your kitchen bench of who's on bins, who's on dishwasher, who's on pets. You rotate it every week so no one gets stuck with the shit job. Every job seems to be the shit job, but depending on the child, why have I got the shit job? But your brother had the shit job last week, honey. Then there's rejects. There's two types of rejects. The first is there's total rejects, just the stupid stuff we do because it's just the way we've always done it. And then there's partial rejects. So the things that we do need to do, but we could just be smarter about how and when we do them. So yeah, we do need to eat, but I don't need to go to the supermarket every single day on the way home from work and get the two things I need. There's a smarter way to do it. So it's in the delegation and the reject pile where you're going to find all the stuff that's going to give you back those 30 hours. You tend to delegate tasks, we tend to reject behaviors. So there'll just be stupid behaviors you're doing that are costing you time. There'll be tasks that you don't need to do, someone else can do for you that will be costing you time.
Beautiful. Thank you. Great answer.
Yeah, that is such a great answer. I've got so many takeouts from that. In the book, I want people to read it because you speak, I feel like you're people are seeing, just even when you're talking then, it's like you've been seeing into my house. I think there's so much that women don't speak about. I do feel that women are opening conversations, they're getting deeper. But I love just the rawness of when you wrote, you said, the day I turned 30, I gave birth to my first child in quick succession. I had two more pregnancies and then had three babies within 3.5 years. I was the primary carer of my children and I continued to work and with various iterations of success, downright failure and a good dose of grit and sheer survival, I managed to integrate motherhood with my career. There's just so many takeouts within your book, but I love that it was almost like a little monologue, that section. It's just so good. And at the end you said, it is my turn. I just found that so liberating that, you know, we are getting to a point, you know, like Anna's still got babies, but I think regardless of where we are as women, we put everybody else first. And thank you for writing that it is my turn. And I hope that people listening can sort of think, okay, I need to step away from that person who became a mum and put everybody else first.
Absolutely. It is. It is my turn. It is your turn. And regardless of how old your kids are, there needs to be time within your week where it is your turn because it's really hard. And I think we also need to normalize that discussion that the juggle is genuine. It's really, really fucking hard. It doesn't get easier as your kids get older. As they get bigger, the problems get bigger and different. And I think it's important to have that discussion that none of us are doing it particularly well. We're kind of scraping by. And anything that you see on, you know, social media and those feeds of these perfect families and these perfect women and these perfect kids, I mean, fuck, if my kids were dressed and walked out of the house with shoes on and didn't have too many stains on their clothes, I was winning.
Yeah. Yep. And on that, because it's a really good point and one of the things that we like to touch on in each episode is like what's having to give in your life at the moment, because it can look like, you know, with Sarah's list of your accomplishments, it may seem like you've got it all together all the time. Can we ask you what's having to give in your life right now? Just to give a bit of perspective to everyone else that everyone has to drop something. what's giving in your life right now?
Well, this is where we cue the screen kind of expanding back so that you can see my living room table. So to my left is a pile of washing that I went away for the weekend, and, you know, you go away hopeful that your children will maintain the home. I got back yesterday and there was washing on the line that had been there for 4 days. So that's now been brought in and it's folded next to me. My son's suit is draped over the chair to the right of me because he went to the races, and I don't know what's on that suit, but it doesn't look healthy. And it's kind of sitting there expecting me to take it to the dry cleaners, but that's just going to stay there for another probably 2 months because I'm not moving it and he's not going to move it. Do you want me to go on?
It's just nice to know that your living room obviously looks like mine as well right now. That's good to know.
Just a quick one, Kate. Anna and I have been working really hard this year on nailing the basics, I guess, developing simple habits that make us happy and that set us up for more productive days. Can you share with us what makes you happy? What's your daily routine and what are your good habits that you've taken on board since writing the Life List?
Yeah. So I now wake automatically, like I don't set an alarm anymore, and I've got myself to the point where I wake sort of automatically around 5 a.m. and then I think this is beautiful, I get to snooze for an hour or two, so I don't put any pressure on myself to get up, and I generally sleep then until 7. I get up, I live across the road from the beach, so I go and meet my sisters at the beach and we swim every single morning, rain, hail or shine.
Wow.
And we've been doing that. That was actually the, apart from the skiing, that was the first Life List challenge I set myself was to swim.
Wow.
And so that is a daily ritual. And they're both mums. One of them has had really challenging health issues. And so on any given day, one of us will kind of be having a mental breakdown as we walk into the water.
Fair.
And just being with them and the joy of being with them and then that cold water swimming, and there's a lot of literature around the benefits of that. By the time we walk out, we are laughing our asses off. You know, we make that much noise. You know, people are like, oh, the Ferris girls are in the water again. So then from that, I then set myself up from a time management perspective. I'm all about doing your high-value tasks in the morning when you're fresh. So I power through my work until about lunchtime. I'll then fiddle around with some lower-value tasks after lunch. Then I'm pens down, tools down. I'll go for a big walk. I pop over and see my dad every single day and sit in the sun and have a cup of tea with him. I'll then hang out with my kids or my partner, and then I go to bed and listen to Harry Potter.
Wow. The dream. The dream.
It is honestly the dream.
So you've written 5 books. You've been living your dream in Bali. You're swimming every morning. You're listening to Harry Potter at night or reading Harry Potter at night.
Your knees are shaking.
Your knees are shaking. Kate,
I know.
What is next for you?
Oh, God, it all sounds pretty fucking good at the moment. next for me, I am taking all of January off.
Wow.
I always meet with my business girlfriends. There's 4 of us. We meet at this time of year and do our business planning for next year. So I'll be sitting down with them for a couple of days to plan out next year. Next year, I always choose my big word for the year.
Ah.
I have one word a year that.
Have you chosen it?
I have. So I will share it with you guys. You are the first to hear it. I don't even share it with my clients. And it's funny because usually the word comes to me. I do this every single year and I get my clients to do it.
It's hard. I've tried doing it and it's really hard.
Yeah, it is hard. And it has to ground you, and it becomes your focal point for the whole year, right? And every single year the word has come to me like that. And I know it's hard because my clients always say it's so hard. And I'm like, well, you know, it's come on, just let's work through it. And what do you want the year to look like? This year's, for the first time, it's been really hard for me to choose. And then last night I was lying in bed. I thought, okay, what the hell? You know what your word is? Moment.
Oh, stop.
I know. It was staring me in the face. So it's about living every moment. It's about making sure that I have momentum in my life with work, my life with my family, my life with my partner, my business, everything. I want to have momentum and I want my year to be momentous. So,
and I feel like that makes you present as well.
Very much. Like, very much.
That word is so powerful.
You're going to have the year of the moment.
Exactly.
Wow.
Kate, beautiful. Just to finish off the show, each week we always ask each other what's brought us joy and happiness, you know, in the last week. We try to talk about moments that set our soul on fire. So are you happy to share with us what's setting your soul on fire at the moment?
Yeah, look, I think it's the simple things and stripping things back to real simplicity. So decluttering my house, downsizing where we live, streamlining the way I live, really having a very basic routine for the day that I stick to, loving my kids, my family, loving my partner. Just the basics is what's giving me enormous joy and feeling of real gratitude. You know, we've had a couple of very, very hard years, and I feel like I'm coming out of that in a beautiful, calm way. And life is great. That's what I'm really feeling a lot of gratitude for.
Wow. You've set my soul on fire for this week. So it's been wonderful to talk to you.
We've been very excited to speak with you. Thank you so much. So much of what you've said has really resonated with us. You've dropped some more gold nuggets, and there are so many more in the book as well. You have other books that are next in my Audible list to listen to. If our listeners are wanting to track down how to get this book or to find out more from you, can you give them some information about where they can find you?
Yeah, sure. So just Google Kate Christie. That's my website, is just my name. You can find my books on Amazon, at Booktopia. This one has just come out, I think, in the last 2 weeks on Audible, which is really exciting. My Insta handle is Kate Christie Loves. That's probably the best place to grab me.
And the website, www.katechristie.com.au.
And you've got free downloads and some wonderful little tangible things that perhaps our listeners can jump on and get started into their best.
Yeah, so there's a free life list planner on my website. Amazing. So you can take that, print out as many pages and copies as you want to start designing your magnificent life, because, you know, life is too short.
It really is. Let's live for the moments.
You are such a weapon. I really hope that this is not the last time we speak to you, Kate. You just resonate with so many of our values, and it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. And yes, hopefully it's not the last time.
I would love to talk to you guys again. It was a pleasure.
All right. Well, they do say that if you do a recap, it sits in your memory a little bit better. So.
Oh, all right, let's recap.
I'd love to hear your takeouts of Kate.
I think my biggest takeout was that when she reframed the moments and the momentum thing, and to me that was really, like, she just has a really beautiful way of explaining how incredible your 50s can be, or just life, any period, any time in your life, reframing how your perspective on things. And the moment thing for me was a reframe of the perspective.
I love the moments.
Yeah.
Becoming momentum. I also love that she went through an ordeal on her 50th birthday. And I just feel we're getting into a society where there's too many victims, poor me. You know, she went through shit and she flipped her mindset.
Exactly.
And she decided, righto, how can I make it better? Mm. And just listening to her, there's so much joy. There is so much enthusiasm. There is so much lived life experience that she's happy to give. And that just set my soul on fire. I just think she's amazing. I could talk to Kate all day long.
Mm, yeah.
I'm definitely going to be insourcing. Watch out, my kids. The floor drobes are going to have a spreadsheet, much to their demise. So I'm bringing in the insourcing spreadsheet. But I do love that how she broke that down. I think there's a lot we can speak to Kate. She's such an intelligent woman. Mm. And I think our next chat with her should be a little bit more delving deeper into attaining those 30 extra hours, because
yeah, I'd love to explore that with
her. How often are we talking to our friends and our community, and everybody is time poor? Mm. And I just love her spin. It's almost like some little magic syrup that we can take to get 30 extra hours to, you know, design our life and do the stuff that we want to do.
Mm. We really hope that you who are listening got some little gold nuggets out of that. If you did, share them with us. We really want to know what your biggest takeaways were. We'll be posting about this on our Instagram at the.work.wives, and we'll have a couple of posts up with Kate and about this episode, because we're really, really intrigued to know the biggest parts that you got out of it, whether you've read her book, and what kind of resonated with you.
And Anna, what a great interview to kick off our very first interview on The Work Wives. This was a bit of a life list of mine.
Good
that
job,
I wanted
Seth.
To bring some other deep thinking women to connect with our audience, and I think Kate was the perfect person to do
she
that.
Yeah,
set the bar high. I've got to go back out now and source some more.
Yikes.
Thank you so much for joining us. This whole episode set my soul on fire. So until next time, goodbye.
See ya.
Workwives want to create a podcast for you, the brilliant, beautiful, talented, and tired working woman. We want to create content that will help you, inspire you, and set your soul on fire. So, how can you help us to help you?
Well, firstly, you can subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen to it to be notified when we release upcoming episodes. It really helps the podcast gods to take notice and pick up what we're putting down for them, so it would really mean a lot to us.
Secondly, follow along on our Instagram at the.work.wives, where we can answer your questions and get to know you. We'd love to learn from you, listen to your stories, and hear about women who you think we should also bring onto the show.
And lastly, share this podcast with the women in your life and put the word out to work wives everywhere. The water cooler is open and we're ready for a global chat. Together with you, let's divide, conquer, and thrive. I'm Anna.
And I'm Sarah, and we'll see you next time.
Workwives podcast acknowledges the traditional owners of country throughout Australia, and we recognise the continuing connection to lands, waters, and community. We pay our respects to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander cultures and to elders, past, present, and emerging.